Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 72nd episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Happy spring, happy Ostara. This feels like a time of potent growth. I woke up feeling that. I've been feeling it for a few days. It's been a long shadow period. I don't know if you feel that, listeners, but I definitely do. Yesterday, I was able to make a desert marigold flower essence, which I've been wanting to do for so long. And I found this little desert marigold along this little wash on this road. And I sat with it and I made this essence with it, and it was so amazing. And it felt like it just filled me with light. And one thing I love about making essences is I feel like the process of connecting with a flower in order to make the essence is one story. And then working with the essence is another story. And then giving it to other people for them to work with it is a lot of other stories. So flower essences to me are story medicine. And I'm hoping today to make another batch of chaparral flower essence because the chaparrals are blooming, some of them. We are in a drought year. The last two winters in the desert, I've been witness to flash floods, which are always really annoying, especially when you live on a dirt road and you can't drive because you don't have four-wheel drive. But those flash floods are what give way to the beautiful wildflowers in the desert, and we just did not get that this year, which is something that I've been really grieving, to be honest, because in these times of climate change, like, what we really don't need is another drought year. So today's conversation is with Remy from Good Witch NYC and the Herbal Mutual Aid Network. And I love this conversation. I feel so grateful that I get to do this podcast and that people like it. And I've been getting so much feedback lately. And I'm navigating my own burnout feelings. So sometimes feedback can be like a double-edged sword and feel like a burden or a responsibility. But when I actually sit down to edit the episodes, it's so restorative for me because a lot of times when I'm, just to be completely honest, like when I'm in the act of interviewing someone, I am tapping into like a space holder energy. I'm thinking about everything they're saying. I'm trying to respond to it, follow up questions. And thankfully, you know, I think I'm starting to get more comfortable with my own neurodivergent communication style and just having guests that understand, like, I'm a big fan of like, you'd have a monologue and then I have a monologue and then you have a monologue, and back and forth conversation is more challenging for my brain. And I realize one of these big, beautiful spring realizations is realizing like a lifetime of feeling so ashamed of my inability to do that back and forth conversation and having a podcast that people resonate with, where I think they are okay with tangential stuff, is really cool. So getting to edit this episode this weekend and listen to it is a new experience, just like that experience of a flower essence. It's different when you make it than when you receive it. And that's how I feel about this podcast. Making it is different because it's work, it's labor, you know, all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, like finding guests, reaching out, doing coordination, you know, the research behind the interviews, etc. And then like the act of putting them together and editing them is a spell. And it is a creative process that I love so much. Even though it does take so much from me, it brings me back to myself and it connects me with other folks. And it's just a massive honor. So connecting with Remy has been a total gift. What an amazing person. And this is a super long interview. And we definitely nerd out a lot about the energetics of plant medicine and essences and somatics and disability and accessibility and all these topics that I've been wanting to touch on more on the podcast and plan to be touching on more in the future. So I hope you love this episode and go give Remy a follow on Instagram. Definitely check out their Patreon. As I ranted about in this episode, their essence for water was mind-blowingly delicious and amazing and powerful. Can't wait for their other seasonal essences this year, and you can only get them when you're one of their patrons. So check it out. And speaking of Patreon, of course, major shout out to my patrons. This is like my virtual tip jar that pays for this podcast to happen, that helps me make donations to guests, to other projects, and it's a massive honor that people want to show financial support for the podcast. It's an honor, and it's really the only thing keeping it going. Like, I definitely could not do this if I wasn't getting some compensation. I love it, but, you know, artists burn out, and this is a work of art, you know, like, that's what I think. I think my work is art, and I'm thinking more about that, especially as I've been focusing more on my analog photography practice, which I've been doing. I have a separate Instagram for that, and it's cool to be able to do my analog photography because it's something that I don't do for money. I don't do it for, you know, anyone else except myself, and it's a hobby and it's a joy, and that's how plant medicine used to be for me. I just think it's an honor to have those things in our life, and it reminds me that, like, the root of why I do Rise Up Good Witch, like, I am a witch, I am an intuitive, I'm a psychic, and I'm an organizer and an abolitionist, but I think beyond all of that, I'm a creator and I'm an artist, and I'm starting to tap more into that part of my identity without all the baggage around it, you know, like capitalism, having to explain our identities, having to explain what we do in the context of capitalism. Whereas for me, like, creating is a spell, it is a channel, it is a way forward, it is a creation, a merging of the messages of my life and the messages of my guides and my ancestors and my communities. So check out the Patreon. All that said, if you like this podcast and you want to support it and you want to get extra content, like an e-zine, a monthly e-zine that comes out almost every month, there's a monthly e-zine, and there's flower essence case studies some months, and there's some shares from some of my apprentices and all that. So anyways, I want to do a couple of shout outs before we get into today's episode about some really cool classes that are coming up in the next couple weeks by former podcast alum. The first one is happening on Thursday, April 8th. It's called Guías Onaricas, Light in the Dark, an Exploration of Dream Medicine. It's by my dear friend Blanca Villalobos. And Blanca is a dream educator, so I know this class is going to be super magical and beautiful, and she's such a sweet soul. So check that out if you're interested in going deeper with your own dream work. I'll have a link in the show notes. And the other class that I want to shout out is from the amazing Levi of Miss T Botanica, another podcast alum who was on a year ago. I feel like it was so much longer ago. They were on more than a year ago, and they're teaching a really important class called Community Care Herbal Aid for Resilience. So this is a sliding scale class, and if you like this podcast and you're an herbalist or you're a plant witch or like a plant person of some kind, and you want to think about how to connect more with your ethics and, like, utilize your ethics when you're running your business, or just utilize your own healing practices, not only for your healing, but the collective healing, I super recommend checking out this workshop. It's going to happen on April 17th, and you can register for it at Sea Grape Apothecary, and also give Levi a following and check out Levi's potions. So I'll have both those classes listed in the show notes so you can check them out. And yeah, if you love this podcast, you know, of course, check out the Patreon. It warms my heart when people decide to join. I'm so happy about it. And another way, if you don't have the cash, totally get it. Go to iTunes or Apple Podcast and leave a 5-star review and a message, a rating, and just help this podcast sustain and maybe grow a little bit. I don't need it to grow a ton. I don't need it to be that big. All right, y'all. Thank you for being here. And I hope you love this conversation with Remy from Good Witch and the Herbal Mutual Aid Network. Thank you. Hello, I'm here today with Remy from Good Witch. Remy, welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you, Karina.
You have so many amazing projects, and I would love if you just wanted to start out by telling us a little about yourself, who you are, kind of like your origin story, whatever you'd like to share.
Good Witch is a pretty broad project, I would say. It's my art and herbal and somatic practice. And a lot of these things, kind of all my work comes together really around language and a bit of an obsession with language in many forms. And also just a real focus around accessibility, since my own experiences with chronic illness and fluctuating abilities are definitely very much the origin of all of this work. So I try to embody that same fluidity, which is just the way that I kind of experience the world as a chronically ill person with fluctuating abilities. I try to really build that into my practice. And it's been a really transformative 8 or so years since the beginning of the project. And it's taken so many turns. But in terms of offerings, I have an apothecary, so I have, a web shop, and I make formulas. I also have a practice called Body Spell, which is a somatic meditation and improvised movement session focused around different herbs, basically a different herb each session. So there's a knowledge share element to that practice. And then the second half is everybody meditating and moving with the plants. And then I also have been doing a lot of writing, which is something I never really expected, because it was always really challenging and a bit fraught for me. But I've been finding a lot more freedom and expression there, and have been offering a lot of writings on my website through what's called the Living Library, which is kind of an ongoing network of information. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But, and then I have a Patreon. So kind of sharing in a bunch of different dimensions, but it's all really about, I'd say it's all really about deepening conversation that's happening within our bodies and among our bodies and the earth and plants and other earth beings. And that what I'm really focused on is building attunement to conversation that's already happening, and just tuning into relationship and interrelation. And that's really where the healing has been for me over the past many years. So I guess to be more specific, I started working with plants to treat my own chronic pain and just mental health issues, where it was a situation where I wasn't able to work a traditional job. So I was pretty much housebound, at least part of the time. And I ended up really wanting to work with cannabis and see if there was anything there for me in terms of support for my pain and for, just a host of different emotional trauma and experiences that were mostly felt in my body. And I wasn't getting a diagnosis for anything other than, fibromyalgia, which is just such a catch-all. And then seems like something autoimmune is going on for you, but not being able to pin it down, and just realizing that whatever was going on with me, I wasn't going to find an answer or get the support I needed from the biomedical industry. And I was very isolated at the time, socially and otherwise, partly because of having limited mobility, and also just because I was struggling a lot and having a hard time building like safe and healthy community. Where this ended up leading was totally unexpected. And I Just started working with cannabis and kind of researching how how to extract the plant. It was really my gateway herb. And it was a trip because I realized pretty instantly that, you know, as a disabled person, to be able to afford to work with this plant for myself, I was going to need to figure out some sort of income. So I ended up, you know, preparing medicine for myself and also for friends and just kind of growing from that place. And when I started this project, I honestly, it kind of all came to me at once. I was so excited about, you know, everything that I could do with it creatively, because I didn't have a creative outlet. It's so hard to be able to afford to have a creative outlet. So before that, I was working in the service industry, which was like really hard on my body and also very time consuming. So I just got so excited about, you know, the stories I could tell visually and just the alchemy of formulation. And it just immediately became really exciting, and all of the dimensions that it could kind of lead into sort of appeared from the get-go, and it was just really inspiring. But then also what crept in immediately as well was just the deep, deep complication on so many levels around commodifying plants as medicine. And I wanted to find ways to, instead of ignoring that awkwardness, I guess, and in creating, you know, the world, or, you know, the visual world and otherwise the language around how people were going to meet my work, I wanted to try to embody that awkwardness and embody tension that I was experiencing, even just as an individual trying to function in a consistent way where I could have a, you know, a practice and hopefully sustain myself through that practice. You know, there is tension there. And I think a lot of times in, you know, quote, wellness spaces, the fantasy is like ease. That wasn't my reality. So I've just always been really interested in how to build those complicated realities into like the way the practice functions on a practical or logistical level, but also building that into, you know, the visual experience of it and the language and how I'm going to approach formulation and how I'm going to engage with my community and how my work is going to impact the earth and how it's going to impact the people around me. So yeah, it's all about relationship and it's all about language and kind of, I've always been really enjoying all of the dimensional aspects of this project. And I've found so much healing through it personally, which is, you know, what it started out being for. But I also really think that it's important to mention that, yes, definitely, so much of that healing has come from, you know, the plants themselves, the medicine, but really what it's been for me has been all about connecting to intuition and really having a more embodied understanding of what my needs and boundaries are. So getting more in touch with my needs through attunement to sensation and that kind of sensory somatic mindfulness. That's where the heart of my work around plants, that's where it is. And that's what I really want to share with people, is that it's not about, you know, this commodified thing in a bottle, that the healing really comes from not even building relationships necessarily, but coming into awareness that they're already there, that we're already in conversation with, you know, the earth, with the plants, with each other. There's already so much conversation happening within our consciousness, you know, in that reality of like mind-body unity, and that, so I feel like it's, I don't know. I'm just really excited about anything around that sort of attunement. And that leads me into all different kinds of worlds, you know, literal language and getting excited about writing and the visual aspect and and the poetry and the movement and most of my work, all of it essentially, I understand as collaboration, and I just really gravitate toward anything where I can be working with people and understanding, you know, or just being drawn to their work based on something that's coming across to me that's, you know, beautiful, exciting, or wanting to explore it or wanting to understand it, and then building something together and kind of bringing our language together. And so, you know, over the past 8 or so years, everything is very different. I've gone from being super isolated and having a lot more limitations than I do now because I do have less pain. But so much of that has to do with how just the plants and my relationship with them has just like guided, you know, so much growth and so much just, I don't know, interweaving with other people around me. And yeah, and just building a real like tangible stability. And that's really where I feel like the healing is. And that, you know, too often in quote, you know, wellness spaces, it's really focused on, but are you taking this herb that's going to do this thing to you? You know, it's very prescriptive, and it's really focused on, putting the responsibility on the individual to sort of somehow heal themselves in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing for me to articulate, honestly, this project. So I'm just kind of constantly in a state of creative output in different areas. And yeah, and just, I guess something else that I would say is that a lot of my work is really focused on sensation and just attunement to sensory experiences. And whether that's just, you know, in a personal kind of body awareness sort of way, or in, you know, doing that deep sensory work with the plants and building relationship that way. And that's because, you know, I'm really into the accessibility of sensation and getting out of, you know, more theoretical ways of working with the plants or feeling like you need to understand some sort of received theory. And, you know, even if you are learning from other people, at least for me, I need to feel like I understand it in my own body, or it doesn't feel like I really have access. It feels like there's an authority kind of there. And
thank you. Yeah, that was great. Thank you for sharing that. And as you were speaking, it just reminded me of how important it is for healing work in whatever form it is, and herbalism should, in my opinion, center and prioritize the voices of folks that live with chronic illness, with mental health, with trauma, neurodivergence, etc., so that it can be focused more on personal healing from a place that the individual can meet, and not from like this really colonial Western narrative of like, how do we get you functioning so you can make money for us in capitalism again, you know?
Yeah, totally. And so much of, even, I don't know, so many of these places, like, you don't even really realize they're not safe until you jump into them. And I know you have chronic health issues as well. And it's, I've just been in so many, you know, since I think anyone growing up in this culture has been through many experiences where, like, there's an environment or an offering that presents itself as being like a safe healing thing. And then you get in there and you're like, oh, this actually is not for me, you know? And it's, you know, for a multitude of reasons. And part of that can be a lack of accessibility for different people's like ability situations. And also for trauma and somatic work in particular, can be really inaccessible, which is, you know, a really big problem. So I find that grounding a lot of that somatic work in earth relationship and directing sensory experiences to a deeper awareness of interrelation can be that kind of stabilizing force that helps me at least remember that, you know, I may be in pain right now, and it may be really hard or really scary to sit there and kind of tap into what's happening in my body. You know, it's not easy for everybody to do a body scan, you know, which is the start of so much of that work. But yeah, just really leaning on relationship and trying to get out of that that colonial perspective of, you know, our separateness that it really relies on, and the separateness that enables people to take authority, you know, often on the sly, you know, through all sorts of language, whether it's biomedical or even around wellness, even in the, you know, the literal language, the words that we use, even in the visual language of the design. So much of it is created intentionally to, you know, validate itself based on like taking a stance of authority. You know, like you'll notice a lot of supplements or herbal extracts will take on this sort of biomedical pharmacy visual language to project like trust and safety. And it's really complicated, and it's really everywhere. And there's just so much tension there. And it's such a wild experience to be, you know, building this practice and thinking about all the different choices everywhere in it. And, you know, what we're really saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I learned about you last year, and I'm not sure if that's when you started or co-founded the Herbal Mutual Aid Network, but I heard about all the work you were doing in NYC last summer when there was uprisings going on. So I would love to hear a little bit about, you know, how long you've been doing the Mutual Aid Network, what it's been like, how it was like during that time specifically, and anything else.
Before the Herbal Mutual Aid Network, Mutual Aid was a part of my practice, but not in a structural way, I guess. It's like a personal practice for me. So I had relationships and, you know, places where I would direct resources, but this has been like a big shift that happened last May, really just a few days after the murder of George Floyd, where my partner in Human, Eve Golden, we just kind of clicked in with each other. We were already friends, but it was just kind of a situation where I feel like a lot of people, if they had resources, were looking around to be like, okay, what are we doing? And a lot of people organizing are like, okay, like everybody, like, what are you doing? And so we just kind of gravitated toward each other and kind of clicked in conversation and just kind of immediately jumped in. We're like, what can we do? We were talking about maybe, like, I knew that Eve knew people who needed support, and I knew, you know, that I had access to herbs. So we were talking about, you know, how we can make distribution happen. And then, yeah, it just kind of clicked, like, what if we built that distribution thing into what I already had going on, and in terms of having, you know, like I have a shipping program membership, I have, you know, some tools, and I have a workshop, and, you know, I'm rather than sending off, you know, however many tinctures to a friend and being like, you want to give these to your friends, which is something that, you know, had been going on, but we really were kind of wanting to go bigger scale. So we started with, you know, just building a bunch of Google Docs and really just kind of hitting the ground running. And it was a lot of energy all at once. I think everybody was kind of feeling and seeing that in just activity all over and in the media and in social media. A lot of people also getting really burnt out really quickly. And so we were really wanting to build a structure that we could just kind of keep moving with. And so we did this sort of virtual intake, like a detailed virtual intake. And after starting off with like a milky oats tincture, then we were like, okay, we have this going. In order to keep it sustainable, you know, with just the two of us, we needed to open it up and see like who else has resources that they want to throw in and we can help with distribution. So we were doing individual care boxes for, you know, individual people who are requesting support, individual Black people specifically who are requesting care. And then we were also sending out bulk supplies to Black-led community organizations who are organizing, you know, in their communities. And I was also locally working with some other herbalists in the Lenape Hoking. Man, I can't remember what we were calling it, but I'm pretty sure we were calling it the Lenape Hoking Herbalist Freedom Fighters Coalition or something like that. But you get the idea. Yeah. And I mean, we're still in touch, you know, just a bunch of people in New York who are organizing specific actions. And, you know, I'm immunocompromised, so it's not a thing where, you know, I could have physically been down there, but I could be up here and asking people, you know, what do you need? And talking to different, you know, herbalists. A lot of our support came from individual community herbalists in the beginning. And then, of course, you know, brands, you know, quote, wellness brands who are realizing like, oh damn, like I'm about to, you know, people are asking me what I'm doing here and I can't kind of just post pictures of like, you know, like a thin cis lady, like doing yoga, like drinking a matcha and call it a day. So there was a lot of that energy too. And it was complicated there. It was okay. I want to tell you everything. I mean, there was so much power. I'll start with that. Just in really just being able to make a phone call, so many different people organizing all these Zoom meetings and, you know, everybody bringing in their individual skills. Some people, you know, really great at like creating these encrypted spaces where we can communicate, and other people, you know, having access to space, you know, physical space and setting up actions and yeah, just, you know, letting people know what we need. Other people are doing you know, actual clinics, and some people are doing, you know, that first aid and emergency support at Actions too. So tons of different things were going on. And yeah, what we were doing really was just trying to help create like a network and understand who's doing what where, so that when resources come in, we know where to send them. And we know what people are up to, so we know what to ask for. And yeah, it was amazing. I mean, it felt really great to be busy because, you know, it was a really grief-stricken moment as well. And being active can be, I don't know, just such a, it's, I mean, physically being able to put your energy somewhere that's going to be healing and engaged and just like connected in movement feels a lot better than being still and stuck and not knowing what to do with what you have. So we need organization to have the flow of resources. You know what I mean? It's, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, definitely individual people can and should, you know, just straight up reach out and offer funds and make sure that they're supporting Black people and supporting Black trans people. But all of this stuff that we're building, you know, it's not an individual project. It is a community. So it was really cool to see that materialize and see that energy sustain. And, yeah, it was also pretty shocking, I would say, to see how much stuff did come through. And, you know, there are some big brands sending, you know, a bunch of stuff, and you just see all the stuff and seeing these objects, you know, that are, their graphic design is, you know, to convey that this is like a luxury product, you know what I mean? And you normally encounter these objects in a space that's highly curated, and also, you know, sending so much messaging, so much signaling, just implicit, you know, capitalist values around it. And no matter what you believe personally, at least for me, being in those spaces and being around that imagery does something. Like, it just messes with you. So it was really wild to see those objects outside of their context, the context where they can control them, you know, control your experience of them, and really just seeing it as a bunch of stuff in a box in my basement, you know,
yeah,
my workshop, and being like, oh my God, like, this is just a bunch of stuff that is being like hoarded somewhere. You know what I mean? And like taking it out of its context, it really, I don't know, it just did something. And it was disturbing for sure. And just, you know, very early on, we felt, yes, absolutely, we will take donations from anyone, you know, who's going to send stuff in, if it's something that somebody can use, if it is going to have value for someone, yes, we'll take it and we'll like redistribute it for sure. And they should, you know, and that should be built into, to these, you know, to these businesses. But also, we don't want to be sending the message to people as we're redistributing these items that this is what healing is, you know, that it's this product that, you know, comes from some, you know, like pastel colored, like LA based, like brand, you know what I'm saying? Like a business. And all of the visual language behind it, it's that, like, you know, really startup-y, very white aesthetic, you know, of like wellness. And early on, from the beginning, we wanted to make sure that we are really promoting from within the community, like what care means, you know, what being well means, from the perspective of people within the Black communities, within Black queer communities, and just building that into what the Herbal Mutual Aid Network is doing. So sort of while we've been continuing to, you know, redistribute these items that are being sent in, we've also been building a collaborative free brand, essentially, where we're going to be transitioning fully once we're, you know, ready, into offering these collaborative formulas, each one is made with a different Black herbalist, and we're also incorporating a bunch of language and just a bunch of different information and words and art from the actual communities that we want to serve, and my partner Eve is a Black trans woman, and she is really leading in all of those ways in terms of like who we are reaching out to. We're also doing, you know, a lot of direct action in terms of just allocating funds to people who are in emergency situations and need them. And finding those organizations to partner with, and, you know, all of that direction is coming from my partner. And yeah, we're just like trying to keep it going and build it out. And ultimately, what the individually curated care boxes are going to turn into, just so we can scale, because, you know, essentially for each box, I've been doing kind of like a little mini consultation for each person. It's a lot of boxes. We're sending out, you know, often like 50 boxes a week. So what that's going to transition to is having these offerings, our sort of collection of offerings in set boxes, that people can come into like a secret web shop and basically place an order for free. So everything's going to be online in that sense. When it comes to still wanting to be able to serve individual people, which is really, really important to us, at the same time, we've been connecting Black-led community organizations with bulk prepared goods, and also connecting Black and Indigenous herbalists who are also organizers who are serving their local communities with no-cost medicine. We're supplying those people with, you know, no-cost herbs and just other materials to formulate with.
Wow, that's awesome. And it's interesting. Yeah, like everything you shared it seems like in the last year, there's been this huge emphasis on mutual aid, and along with that, an emphasis on mutual aid within community herbalists. And what I thought was really interesting last summer was, for me, like doing herbal mutual aid has been sort of a cornerstone of my practice, and I got into that more rooted in like harm reduction and getting herbal formulas out to houseless folks, specifically those who are IV drug users. Mm-hmm. And I live in a rural community, like a very conservative rural community in the Mojave Desert. And it was interesting during that time to be networking nationally with like people that are in urban areas, and to see like these movements for mutual aid and community herbalism happening in urban areas, and then like trying to cultivate that in a small conservative community was interesting, especially, you know, in a pandemic and not being able to like be face to face with people. That's amazing. I didn't know it was 50 boxes per week. That's huge that you guys are distributing to everyone. So it seems like this is, you know, I'm hoping that this is sustaining, because I think, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of burnout, and I'm dealing with that myself. I'm learning a lot, even though I've been doing like organizing off and on for like half my life. I feel like I still have a lot to learn about like sustainable movement forward and not burning out, especially as someone that has chronic illness and is on the autism spectrum and has mental health and trauma. Just like burnout is like a very real threat and can be really debilitating. Yeah. And can do harm, you know, like when mm-hmm. people are burnt out, they're like more likely, I think, to like not show up in their healthiest
and therefore more susceptible to doing harm. And I think it's, you know, important also you're talking about centering Black folks in this project and then also like collaborating with Black folks. And I know, you know, for myself as a white person, it feels really important to integrate reparations, and especially since I'm like an anarchist, anti-capitalist, white queer person, I feel like if I'm a business owner, you know, if I'm a business owner and I'm centering my beliefs in my business, it's really important for me to put that into practice. So I appreciate hearing your perspective on that.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't know, the energy, like, I think I've seen more and more people really building mutual aid into how their practice works. There's also a lot of people, you know, who have and have been doing it, you know, for a long time before it was so much in, you know, just the sort of overall dialogue. And there's so much history there. So like so many people to learn from. But it's been, it's been maybe not surprising, but interesting to see that sort of overall rush, in the beginning, like a massive, like influx of resources. And we're still working off of that, you know, we're still like, we're still able to, you know, sustain for right now. We definitely are at a place where we need to, you know, bring in more support and keep building forward. But it's really important to be building, taking that momentum, not just into kind of what can I do this week? And, you know, you just, there were so many early on that week, like all these like press requests and people who, you know, brands or something who were like, come do, be on our Instagram live and stuff like that. And, you know, we realized really quickly that that was actually just a lot of the time, not always, but a lot of the time it was really, it's not like these people were donating, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's really just people wanting more labor and really just trying to aggressively brand themselves as being part of movement, you know, kind of on their feet in the moment. So, you know, we didn't do much of that. And we also, you know, when we did, I think we did do an interview and like felt kind of burned by it and really just not happy with how that turned out and feeling, you know, kind of misrepresented and, you know, just sort of co-opted. So it was, those feelings just really focused us on the work and just kind of, I don't know, just doing the day-to-day stuff. And the beginning of any project like this takes a lot of energy because you're building a system and then you're stepping into that system and hopefully you've built something that you can just kind of sustain and operate like over time. So I feel like we've settled into a really nice flow and, you know, definitely have capacity to keep it going and we want to grow it, but we're doing that in an organic way and really just responding to, you know, the needs of the moment. And just, I mean, the ground is always moving, you know, right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's cool that you have so much, you know, so many people to work together. I think that's like one of the benefits of being in an urban area is like having a lot of resources in terms of like different people with different perspectives, with different skill sets. And it can be harder to make those networks, I think, in like a rural area a lot of the times. But it's, you know, one thing about that experience that I'm just reflecting back of you having an interview where it sounds like it was a little bit exploitative, maybe a little bit performative, or maybe a lot performative. I've been in the last year, like really thinking about how all social media is performative. Like I've been, you know, for myself, like thinking about like all the stuff that I do on social media is performance, but it's, you know, it's about like the, you know, what actions we can take in our day-to-day life and what, you know, how we're grounding in our ethics and our frameworks that we hold with our belief systems, how we actually like take that and turn it into action and like ground it into our routines and our everyday life. So yeah, and I would love to switch a little bit because I joined your Patreon and I got the, I guess you do like a seasonal essence. And I love it so much. I love this essence. So you made this essence and then it comes with this like little scroll. And I just want to read it. It says, "This year's water potion is a catalyst for deep restorative introspection and integration, for accessing visionary states beyond time and self-narrative, to be used in ritual and dream work, or to bring intuitive presence into waking life." And it has essence of freshwater jellyfish, pearl, periwinkle, and it's suspended in a mugwort tincture. And it is so amazing. I love essences anyway. I'm like a huge essence person. But there was something about your essence. I took it earlier this week and then I took it last night because in kind of in preparation for this reading, and I have never, so I was like sitting at my altar doing like my little like nightly spell work manifestation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I took one dose of it. And then I like took two more doses in the next five, like I took three doses in 5 minutes, which, so I basically took like a tincture dosage of it, which mm-hmm. is, I know, not what I'm supposed to do, you know, essence is like less is more, but it was just like, I felt like it like gave me this feeling in my body that was so huge that I just like wanted to keep it. I wanted to like keep taking that feeling in. Like I was like, I wish this tincture or this essence blend was like a bottle of wine. And I don't drink, but like, you know, I was like, I wish this was huge, 'cause I feel like I would just want to like drink a wine glass of this. And it was, you know, I love mugwort. Like mugwort is like one of my favorite allies. In fact, like I've been having a pain flare up today and I've been like using mugwort oil during this conversation. But it was the flavor. Like I love the flavor of mugwort. To me, it's not really bitter anymore, or it's bitter in like a delicious way, but I could did you use the root in that? 'Cause I feel like I could taste like the earth. Like I could like taste every part of the plant.
Ooh, I love that so much. I just used the aerials in that tincture, but for me, so all of this is one of my elemental potions. So I'm doing like a year long series of these potions, one for each season. But there are actually five of them because it's kind of synced up to five element theory on traditional Chinese medicine, where we're talking about five seasons. Late summer is like an extra season. But so this potion, the base is the tincture, and then there are a few essences suspended in it. And I made this potion after doing, so every month the body spell sessions are around a different herb. So it's like a super deep dive for me into all this research and getting deep into, you know, for sure all the herbal stuff, the herbal actions and all of that. And also a bunch of sciencey stuff, but also a ton of lore and a ton of ethnobotany and just kind of getting really, really deep around a specific herb. So mugwort was the one that I had spent time with. And I mentioned that a lot of the work that I do is like very focused on sensation, and the way that I'm working when I'm making essences is really kind of based on these sort of spatial images that'll kind of come to me based on the sensation of working with the plant. So with mugwort, the flavor of it for me is really, there's like this tension in it because there is such an intense earthiness and like a depth to mugwort in the bitter, you know, side of it. Mm-hmm. But then there are also these amazingly complex, like ethereal volatile oils of the plant too. Mm-hmm. So there's this really deep bitter earthiness and then like this really ethereal aromatic side to it. And that kind of tension for me is like what creates that movement in mugwort, like that sort of the pendular tension between, you know, the earth and the ether in that sensation is like, for me, it just kind of starts this like spiraling, like upward kind of spiraling motion. And that's what feels so connected with the moon to me for mugwort. And yeah, so I don't know.
Like, I love
when you mentioned the taste, like, yeah, it just really, really brought me there. But it's so amazing. It's so fun to make them.
Yeah, I'm excited to continue to work with this essence and to get other essences from you. Yeah, it feels really special. And essence making is something that I've really been enjoying in the last few years. And when I was thinking about like, oh, there's so much collective grief right now, you know, and that's like a bigger thing I was thinking when you're talking is like, I've seen like there was such a huge momentum with a lot of movement work last summer and last fall. And then like, I felt like after the election, a lot of it like slowed down. It's still happening, obviously. And that I understand people need breaks. But it's like Biden isn't, you know, like I'm like, it's not like things are going to like really change. Like we're still like in the current system. But I feel like, you know, there's just been so much grief, collective grief, like catching up. I know like my pain issues have gotten so much worse over the last year, I think. And from the stress and from the uncertainty and from, you know, just, yeah, so much like wondering if we're going to go into like straight up fascism and, you know, people, yeah, whatever. I'm like on a tangent about this. Oh, what I was going to say, you know, we're in the Hierophant year, and I really was thinking, and I'm in some classes and like doing some really deep self-care work on myself, probably for the first time in my life. And I turned 40 this year. I asked myself, like, what are your expectations for this year? And my bar has been set so low because I spent so much of last year being like, I might die, you know, like I might get killed or get sick and die. In the last year, that I think like the thing that I really identified is like, I want to make a lot of flower essences. That's just what I want to do. Like, and that feels like a response to eco grief, to the immense pain of like facing like a scorching and like freezing planet, dealing with state sanctioned violence, which I myself have the privilege of not being as affected by as a white person, but just like systems of power, like extreme inequality and capitalism. What the anecdote to all that feels like for me is like flowers. And I love other, you know, learning from other flower essence practitioners, like deepening my own practice with flowers. And I do feel like you can, you know, I get a lot of flower essences from different folks, and I can, you know, what I loved about your essence again is like, there were so many layers. It was so powerful. There was so much storytelling in that essence. And then it makes me think about the fact that you've done so much somatic work, and that feels like the connection, like from my perspective, I was like, okay, this person does a lot of somatics. And somatics was always hard for me because I'm not like a feelings person. I'm a thinking person. So when people be like, how do you feel in your body? It like just makes me mad a lot of the times. But I started doing somatics, and that like helped me. Like I've had so many intense realizations about my trauma, about chronic illness and like autoimmune stuff that I have just been like pushing down. And it came out within just like a few practices of somatics with a lot of this other stuff. So that's what I like really loved about your essence, is just like, I feel all the layers of that somatic work in it. That's so cool.
That makes me so happy that like came across, because that's really like, for me, my plant medicine practice is a somatic practice. And that's what led me into it, was just kind of sitting in, I mean, you get so much feedback, sensory feedback from cannabis, And that was my way in. So that was my way into working with plants, and it's a lot, and it can be overwhelming. It can be like straight up uncomfortable, you know, and like, you know, not for everyone, not for every moment. But it really did make me curious about like, what are the other messages like coming through, you know, in that sensory way with other plants. And, I don't know, just kind of understanding, at least for me, like this sensory experience, that's where, you know, people say like plant spirit communication. People talk about essences being energetic rather than physical or something like that. But if you don't believe that the mind and body are separate, which I personally don't, but I really believe in a way that everything is body, you know, that rather than, you know, wanting to get away from the body, like that's another, that division is a hierarchy, and the division, you know, between mind and body has been the basis of so much oppression. And really, I think is fundamental also to capitalism, because, you know, it's this idea of the mind as a ruling factor over the tissues of the body that are somehow passive and being directed. And it's always been that ruling classes, ruling races, ruling genders are, you know, associated with the mind, and the body is projected as this lower state of being on the people who are being oppressed. And so like, that's a really solid reason to question, that division, but it's totally built in to our language, you know, at least the language that you and I are communicating in right now, and the language that's dominant in this, you know, culture, you know, that we're talking about, you know, of like, white dominated, like Western, quote, Western, like, you know, capitalist culture. So it's really important to me to find spaces beyond language. I can't really get out of it. I can't, you know, like I speak a couple other languages, I've studied other languages, but a lot of the same things are going on in these languages. The roots are the same, and a lot of the assumptions built into the language are the same. And so much of the violence of colonization has been destroying people's languages. And like one of the first things that happens is the outlawing of these other languages, because, you know, it is understood how powerful, language is, and that, you know, it determines the bounds of what we're able to conceive of in terms of, you know, how we're able to understand and actually experience our own experiences in the moment, and also what, you know, futures we're able to envision and then build. So I think increasingly in these times that are just so full of upheaval, and there's so much energy and so much of just like a calling out for wanting change, it's really for me these wordless spaces, where, you know, these ceremonial spaces of movement, and for that sort of sensory communication with the plants and building deeper attunement to that feeling of connection and the communication that is going on, the fact that we are, you know, really so deeply fully connected and, you know, even one, to be looking for that, as an embodied experience, something that you can actually feel, you know, and that can be, you know, the touch point, the guiding point, that feeling of immersion and connection. And yeah, it's powerful. And so all of that feeling is really what I'm hoping to get across, through, you know, the different aspects of this project. And also when it comes to the actual essence making, there's always like movement built into that ritual. And for me, it's a sense of like the base herb that I'm selecting for an essence has for me some sort of, I understand it as like a pattern of movement. Like I feel it in a kind of Yeah, just like a sort of a spatial image. I don't know how to really describe it, but sort of visual, sort of spatial, but definitely felt in the body. And each plant has a different kind of impression in that way. And that's sort of how the essences are being carried through that movement pattern. And then the essences that are suspended in the base are kind of specifying and maybe determining aspects of the quality of that movement or what's being moved. And so, yeah, it's really definitely this felt experience that I want to share. And yeah, it's so fun. It's really wild because when I started working with plants, I specifically was such a, was so rude. And I remember telling a friend that I really wasn't interested in essences at all. I really was so not about it. And part of it for me was because I was like, okay, who's Dr. Edward Bach? Like, you know,
yeah.
And like this, like guy is like telling me what the plants are saying. Like, I don't think so. You know, it just also because, some of the ways that I had encountered flower essences, it wasn't really transparent. The way that they were working, if that makes sense. So I was like, what is it? Is this a tincture? You know what I mean? It kind of felt like some, like maybe someone was trying to trick me, you know, that was my, my experience of it at the time. But then, yeah, I realized, I don't know, like I really came around to it from just continuing to study the herbs and also just getting really into the neuroscience behind somatics and bringing that together with, you know, my excitement around language and really specifically around poetry. And that I see the essence making as a sort of as poetry and a language that can kind of permeate in a way that literal language doesn't, and that we can make essences, we can do whatever we want with them, you know, and you can definitely bring in, you know, traditionally associated meanings with the different, you know, beings that we're working with there. But remembering that those are stories and definitely having that value for those shared stories, but also asking like, where are these associations coming from? Are they cultural? Are they specific to, you know, to whose perspective, you know, do I have an authentic relationship to them, you know, to the so-called, you know, meaning of this particular flower essence, or am I just kind of carrying that forward as something static or that I received in the way, you know, I'd be like, oh yeah, here's a Tylenol and it will do this. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes, totally. And it's funny when you're talking about language and poetry as this modality that you have worked with in other areas of your life that you integrate into your plant medicine practice, because I feel that way. Like I have academic, like I got a master's degree in applied anthropology and anthropological research. And to me, flower essences are super related to ethnography specifically, because the idea of ethnography is like, you're an outsider. You probably come from like more systemic privilege than the people that you're studying. So when you go into that situation, you change the situation just by existing there. And that is like an important part of like the ethics in anthropology, is like acknowledging that anywhere that you show up, you alter that space in some way. And that is like the framework that I use to think about flower essences. And I do like a plant witch mentorship. And one of the things we do is like a flower essence case study. And it's interesting because we talk a lot about that, how, you know, we're all working with this different essence, but the essence is going to show us different parts of ourselves. Cause like our bodies are like the situation, our bodies are the environment, and the essence is that thing coming in that's going to change the environment. But because each environment is different, the essence is going to work in a different way. So, yeah, I love what you say about you know, the allopathic medicine about like you take this and it makes you feel this way doesn't really apply with energetic medicine and, you know, essences, because it is like a thing that we take into ourselves that alters us in the way that we need to be altered in that moment in time.
Yeah. And I think that really part of why that's true is because what we're doing is we're taking in a story, like we're taking that into our consciousness, you know? So whatever we associate, whatever something means to us, whether it's coming through, you know, what the flower looks like to us, you know, or something, how it makes me feel when I look at this, who told me about it, you know, like how I'm connecting with it, or some specific cultural associations, or, you know, just what's going on in the moment, like you were saying, like in your body. It's really personal, and it's like, it's becoming part of your consciousness. And it's cool just to think about. I think that's really empowering, for anyone who's interested in working with essences, is to think of them in that way. I think of them as like medicines of meaning, and that we're just bringing in, like, not just this thing of, I don't know, like some distillation of like spirit in an abstract way. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that we're having a conversation with the plant, and that conversation is also a conversation with ourselves, like within ourselves, you know? So there are all these like, just like loops of relationship that are coming together.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to like quickly talk about hawthorn, because I noticed that was like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it looked like that was the herb that you were working with in like your somatic plant meditation for this month. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it. I feel like, yeah, hawthorn is such an intense, for me, I know I worked with it as a spirit dose when I took a class from Rachel Burgos from Snake Root a couple years ago on energetic medicine. And like hawthorn, like just kills me. It just like kills me. It's like such a, it's, and I've read some things lately about it, and about like the folklore regarding hawthorn as like being like this like passageway before death almost, and also like ego death, I should say, not like physical death. And also, you know, the relationship between the Ten of Swords and hawthorn and tarot, which made a lot of sense to me when I worked with the spirit dose. So I just kind of wanted to get some of your reflections on hawthorn.
Yeah, hawthorn totally like blew up for me during this, the research for this session. So yeah, hawthorn was the herb that we worked with in this month's session, which was, like 9 days ago. So this is February. So it's always like this. It's always like this unfolding of, you know, I think I know something about an herb, you know, and there's so much, and a lot of it is beautiful. I mean, and a lot of it really does ring true. Just the association that many people have with hawthorn as support in times of grief and as a heart supporting medicine. And yeah, and all this, and then getting into the really deep lore around it, it totally exploded. And it was through a combination of, you know, like I was saying, it's this scientific research and into, you know, constituents, but maybe I have my own way of thinking about that, you know, which is, I would say, like not a reductionist way, but still being really interested in that information and integrating it in a more, you know, whole embodied way of thinking about this being hawthorn. The trimethylamine, one of the constituents in the flowers of hawthorn, gives them this scent that has long been associated with death, and also with sex. It's a it attracts carrion insects, which are the main pollinators of hawthorn. So, you know, like flies are one of the main pollinators. They're attracted because this is trimethylamine is one of the first chemicals that's released in decaying bodies. So there's so much deep association with death and hawthorn and this other kind of dark, you know, so-called side that I wasn't fully aware of before, in just, you know, however in my, you know, herbal self-study education, it just hadn't crossed my path yet. And I hadn't done a lot of deep work individually with hawthorn, which is part of why I gravitated. And, in this moment, you know, where there's so much grief and something, I'm not going to say everything about the plant, but something that hit me so hard, was, you know, the name hawthorn, haw, and, it means hedge in Anglo-Saxon. So literally, and then thorn. So the name of the tree, it's named after this being a boundary plant, that these trees, they create boundaries. They're thorny, they're hard to cross, and they grow kind of in these thickety ways when they're planted in hedgerows. So they had long been associated with themselves being portals. There's just so much there. I mean, there's so much lore there with the idea of hawthorn as an actual gateway in itself from this world to other worlds. And then during the British agricultural revolution in like the 18th and 19th centuries, the government starts mass producing hawthorn saplings in order to create field boundaries for the enclosure acts, which basically were put in place to mark the end of common land in England and Wales. So it used to be a right for people to, you know, forage or even create like kind of woodland stands that they would manage in areas that, yes, while still technically kind of under the ownership of a, you know, lord or whatever, these are places that were kind of in between places, like liminal spaces that people could access to meet their needs, people who didn't own land. So it's just so wild, and was just such a, I don't know, it just hit me so hard that these plants themselves, once the boundaries are in place, this is when the government starts enforcing industrial farming practices and essentially removing more and more independent landowners off of their land, because if they're not following these industrial farm practices, they're not creating enough productivity. And then like the industrial practices drive up productivity, but then also drives up their rent. And this was literally done just to basically force independent landowners out and force poor people into cities where they then had to work for other people rather than sustaining for themselves. So this is like, you know, this is really the at the heart of, you know, the situation that we're living in now. And it's just this really, really deep cutting, really dark irony of in the transition from hawthorn is this demarcation of magical boundaries, you know, between otherworld and this world, to then being an imperial boundary. And then with this being put in place, the anti-foraging laws begin, and people are really strictly, stringently punished for entering these spaces. And this is also where the term hedge witch comes from, is from people who would be kind of sneaking, because they were no longer allowed, into these hawthorn thickets to forage medicine, whether it were the actual, you know, hawthorn itself is a medicinal herb, or all of the amazing magical plants that would grow, you know, in the shade. So I'm sure a lot of those are, you know, medicinal, and probably some so-called poisonous, you know, plants too. So there's this whole like liminal, just like ecosystem in these hedges that are put up as boundaries to keep people, you know, where they're supposed to be, and create these demarcations of property and territory. But the hedges themselves still have this magic where they're drawing people in and just creating, it just like, it hits me so hard. Just all the, the beauty. And I now really go to Hawthorne when I want to connect with just like ancestors, who are people, you know, infiltrating these liminal spaces and thriving in spaces that aren't, you know, so-called their own, and people who are, you know, doing what they can to meet their needs and operating outside of, you know, dominant societal bounds. So that was new. That was really deep and new for me, was this sense of Hawthorne like leading us back into a sense of connection and belonging, by shifting our understanding of boundaries and what they can mean. And I mean, it just went so deep. So I loved that session, and I'm so glad that we recorded it. It's it's still available. But it's, you know, there's so much history of Hawthorne as a famine food as well, for Indigenous people of mm-hmm. Turtle Island. And also, Hawthorne fruit being such an important staple for enslaved people on Turtle Island, Black enslaved people on Turtle Island, and how very similarly to what happened in England after the Civil War and the Reconstruction era, when the initial, you know, anti-foraging laws are created literally intentionally to stop Black people from being able to sustain themselves financially, because many formerly enslaved people were, you know, making money by selling plants that they and foods that they medicines and foods that they forage. So Hawthorne again is at the center of this really similar thing going on, and I just think that speaks so powerfully to Hawthorne being an important ally right now for people who are looking for, you know, healing by really insisting on their own relationship, their individual relationship to the earth and to these medicines as sustaining forces and communities built around just infiltrating these spaces. There's so much there for Hawthorne. Had no idea when I was getting into it, but it's interesting how these stories, the history even becomes a somatic experience, you know, just mm-hmm. part of the medicine of Hawthorne for me is just knowing this story and seeing how it feels in my body mm-hmm. and, you know, connecting that to everything that, you know, we know about Hawthorne interacts with our bodies and on other levels, maybe on chemical levels, or, you know, just those other languages of herbal actions and all that. So, yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. That was amazing. It really inspired. I have so much of a relationship in my personal life with Hawthorne, as it was the, my best friend died in 2019, and a month before they died, they sent me like a box of Hawthorne berries that they had foraged from like a tree they slept under. And so like that is something that like, you know, really fortifies my relationship with Hawthorne. Thank you. Just, I can't wait to go back and like watch that video of the Hawthorne somatic workshop that you did. I wanted to ask about your, you know, you mentioned a little bit about what your current offerings are, but for folks that are listening and want to connect with you, what's a good way for folks to learn more about your work?
Definitely Instagram. It's where I'm more active. And that handle is goodwitch.nyc. Even though I'm not located in the city anymore, I'm upstate and I'm on Mexican land. I am also on Facebook, and that page is called Good Witch World. And then my apothecary and those offerings, also some art, is available in the web shop. And the website is goodwitch.nyc. And also on Patreon, which is where a lot of offerings over there. And that's patreon.com/, it's like goodwitch, but the O's are X's. So GXXDWITCH. Yeah.
Awesome. And I'll put all of that in the show notes so people can easily find your work. But thank you so much for having this conversation. This was so rich. We covered so many things. I'm really happy to be able to have shared this conversation with you and then to be sharing it with so many of the podcast listeners.
Thanks so much. It's really exciting. I really appreciate it. And it's been really great to talk to you. I also forgot that I should mention, as far as human stuff goes, the Herbal Mutual Aid Network, our website is www.hman.love. And if folks want to contribute funds, they can Venmo at CHAT_NOIR. And that goes to my partner, Eve, who does all the fun stuff. So thank you. And if anybody is an herbalist and, or, you know, is connected to any sort of wellness related business and wants to contribute goods, or maybe a farmer wants to contribute herbs, they can email me through the human website, or they can send me a DM on the goodwitch.nyc Instagram.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'll definitely add that to the show notes. And yeah, thank you for collaborating with me in this way. Thank you for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.